John, you're going to fly the approach to San Carlos and land at San Carlos. That's the plan. But what if the weather's just a little bit better than you thought? The ceilings are at, say, 2,200. You break out, you see Palo Alto. It's, you know, just off to your right, a little bit in front of you. See the beacon, see the runway. Looks like a simple VFR arrival. What are the chances that you decide that you want to break off and land at Palo Alto now?
I wouldn't do it. And for a couple of reasons. One, I've briefed the approach to San Carlos. I've made my decision that that's what I'm going to do. I've got the approach loaded. I've been cleared for it. I briefed it. I can imagine the coordination requirement that would happen if all of a sudden at the final approach fix, I'm already talking to San Carlos Tower. I say, I want to break it off and go over to Palo Alto. And you start that turn, the NorCal approach controller is going to be on the line going, what the heck is he doing? You got to coordinate with the two different towers and stuff. At that point, it's probably not worth it. You've committed to the mindset for all the reasons that we laid out there. It's been a long day. You're tired. You just want to get this thing on the ground. Let's not throw a curve in at the end.
So even if you were to coordinate beforehand with the controller and say, hey, I'm going to fly this approach, but there's a chance that I might request to break off on a visual approach to Palo Alto. This is just the right plan to land at San Carlos.
Yeah, I made the decision 10 miles back when I accepted the approach clearance for San Carlos. That's my mindset now. I'm going there.
Sure. So a number of you here are also not going to try to get into Palo Alto. I want to see what the objection is for each of you. Let's start with Bruce.
I've got a couple. One, I'm putting myself now in the right seat as the flight instructor on this, and it's my ticket that's on the line here if something happens. And the second big consideration is this is really complicated, congested airspace. And so if I break off and cancel, now all suddenly I might need a Class B clearance. You know, there's a real mix of traffic around here. I've flown in and out of San Carlos, and changing the plan at the last minute like this could put you in all kinds of trouble in a big hurry. And leave aside the cloud clearance requirements and everything. I just don't want to do it. I'm with John. Stick to this plan, land. It's not that inconvenient to land at San Carlos and get an Uber to Palo Alto and fix it in the morning when everybody's refreshed.
Right. It's about a 20-minute drive.
Yeah.
I think.
It's not great, but it's not a, 100-mile trek.
Right. Catherine.
So I've actually done a version of four a number of times near my home airport. My home airport has no instrument approaches, so I have many times done an approach into the nearby airport, and once I'm under some reasonable ceilings, I can cut over to my home airport. So actually four was tempting for me, but as Bruce said, it's busy airspace. And this is not his home airport. This is an airport that is unfamiliar to him. So I think those were the two reasons that made me go to five for this pilot.
Yeah, and it turns out that this is actually something that the locals do. You know, some variation on fly the approach to San Carlos, break off for Palo Alto. So, it may make a difference if, like you do at your home airport, if this were your area, right? What about you, Mark? You're choosing five, but with a caveat.
Five with a caveat. I also had the same experience as Catherine. During my instrument training, we were right on the edge of Bradley International's airspace out of Ellington, Connecticut. And we would, when it was IFR, we would fly the approach into Bradley, then break it off and trek over to Ellington, which had no instrument approaches. So that's kind of where my background lies. But I pick five because it's unfamiliar, it's at night, it's after 2 days of extensive training. There's just too many things that can go wrong. My hesitation with it was that of the other ones, I kind of like three a little bit if those other considerations weren't there, because on that one, you're still following the instrument approach procedure. So if something goes wrong, you're on track. If you get down there, you don't like what you see, then you just continue the procedure instead of having to find your way back to it from an MVA.
Yeah, and by if you don't like what you see, is there something specific you'd be looking for, something objective that you could say, if I see this by this point, I'll go for it, otherwise I'm just going to continue and land?
I think it's really one of those, I'll know it when I see it. You're going to go by it and go, yes, I can make it, or no, I can't. And certainly the nighttime, without familiarity, the nighttime really has that other issue where you don't know where those obstacles are.
Doug, you're going to request the MVA over the airport.
Yes, I am. John said they might not. Well, you're not going to know until you ask. And so I would request it with a plan to go to San Carlos if they denied the plan. And my request would be, I'd like minimum vectoring altitude over Paso Robles. If it doesn't work, requesting vectors to San Carlos.
And why is that better to you than using the approach to get down below the clouds? Because you're still within, you know, if you use the approach, you're still within 2 or 3 miles of Palo Alto. That's, I'm saying if you use the San Carlos approach, that is.
I don't know.
Fair enough. If, you know, in the situation that you're saying, you want vectors close to the airport, which may or may not work with the traffic flow in that area. But even if you did, say you get down to 1,800 feet and you're over the airport, you're still going to have to look down, find it, coordinate with the tower, circle around to land, and now you're completely out of position if that doesn't work.
Okay, I understand that, but if I recall, there were runway end identifier lights.
Yep.
And a PAPI. Okay, I've certainly seen at my home airport with the runway end identifier lights. If you're not really lined right up with them, you're not going to see them. And by getting the MVA, it gives me the opportunity to perhaps see those lights, say I've got it, and go on down. And that's the difference. Flying the approach to San Carlos, I'm far enough off that I doubt that I would see those lights. And as we've talked before, quite often the thing that makes an approach happen or not is the lights.
Yeah, that's true. And asking for the, you know, direct to the airport at the MVA is a very normal thing to do. It's a, you know, it's very standard request, right? It's not a hard thing to communicate.
Right. And to be quite honest, I've used it quite often when, you know, P factor, and I'm not talking about that left turning tendency, says that I've got to get home pretty quick. And rather than flying an approach into my home base, I'll ask for vectors over it at the MVA. And if I've got things or even can do a contact, it's not dealing with the night issue, but, you know, it's a technique that I've used more than once.
Those low lights are exactly the reason why I like staying with the approach. You know, if I'm being vectored to it, I may see it, I may not, but then I have to, we have to kind of find our way back onto the approach, or we have to go around and try it all over again, which defeats the whole purpose of trying to get in. While if I'm simply on the approach and I'm 3 or 4 miles away, I look out the other side of the airplane and either there's an airport or there's not an airport.
John.
Actually, I want to hear Dave.
Yeah, so Dave, you're going to make this happen one way or another. What's your favorite way to make it happen?
Well, it's like all of these look great to me except going to San Carlos. Any of these, they seem totally doable. You know, if I do the RNAV approach to 3-1 at Palo Alto, great. You know, I'll do that on my own risk. Granted, it's night. I buy the fact that it's like we're after civil twilight. But it's like if I'm cleared for that approach and I execute that approach and then cancel IFR, it's 10 miles visibility. It's a 1,900-foot ceiling. I just think there are lots of safe ways to land at this airport. And I would just regard it as a moral failing if I had to go somewhere, I'm an IFR pilot. I'm with an IFR instructor. I've been practicing all day. It's like, if I can't make a, you know, maneuver to land VFR on a clear night, you know, I'm surprised that nobody else is going for this. But it does not seem like a death-defying maneuver.
I have to say, if you're going to land at Palo Alto, I mean, we can't advocate for doing the approach that's NA, but if you could do it at your own risk, you know, the issue is the obstacles on final, which are an issue no matter what, right? The unlit obstacles, no matter how you choose to land there. Doing it via the approach then seems like the gimme way to do it. Right?
Absolutely. And I loved I loved John's idea of fly the approach at Moffett. It's like, what obstacles are you going to hit over the bay? You know, you're over water. You know, you should have the airport in sight easily, and maneuvering to stay within 3 miles flying the VASI seems totally doable. So I think you guys are vastly overthinking this. there's a difference between what's legal and what's safe. And it's like, I get not authorized at night, but it's like, this just does not seem like an unreasonable thing is to land at Palo Alto after dark.
John.
So, a couple of things. Well, you gave me so much to talk about. I think, at least for me, I have to agree that the approach is NA. So you can't even execute it. You'd be violating an FAR by doing that, and we can't advocate violating an FAR. But the other side of it, and it was what Bruce touched on, is, okay, I'm the rock star sitting in the right seat now. I've been beaten up on this pilot all day. I want to see their decision-making. I want to see their thought process on how they're going to work this out. And is their thought process going to be, well, I can cobble together some kind of procedure that's going to get me down and get me landed? Or do I want to sign off an IPC on this person that has executed some forethought and some planning, some figuring out a strategy for how to do this? So that's kind of the part of it, too. You know, if it was home base and you were just looking to get home, yeah, maybe that would be a different story. But this is a test.
This is CYA for ATC. If I can throw in a bunch of letters, it's like we can. This is a reasonable thing to do. At my former home airport, there were approaches that were not authorized at night, and the reasons for it were many and varied. But it's like, okay, they hadn't trimmed the trees at the tree line. If you stay on the VASI, they're not an issue at all. The lack of authorization for this approach at night has purely to do with some other agency's concern. This does not strike me as risky at all. And if that lowers me in the estimation of this YouTube rock star, then so be it. But it's like I just, you know, clear to land at Palo Alto. That's where I'm going.
Well, I just think context is everything here. This kind of procedure where you fly an approach to one airport and then continue VFR to another airport, that's a fine technique at a lot of places. But here at Palo Alto, San Carlos, San Francisco, Class B is not the place, in my opinion, to do that, especially as it's getting dark. The locals may be able to do it because they're familiar. They know the words that ATC wants to hear. They've got a relationship with ATC that knows how to do it. But I don't, and I'm not doing this. And I also have a question, though, too. You know, we've mentioned several times about you could maybe request a contact approach, for example. Well, I know in the Seattle area, if you ask for a contact approach, you hear laughter on the other side. You know, I don't think anyone's ever been approved for a contact approach at Boeing Field. You know, it's just not going to happen. I don't know whether it would be a strategy that would work here in the San Francisco area, but I kind of suspect that might be kind of hard to get that clearance.
Well,
depending on the traffic.
I'll defer to the legal opinion here. So one of the requirements for a contact approach is that there has to be an instrument approach to the airport.
Yeah, there you go.
This approach is NA. It's as it was never published. So can you even do a contact?
Beats the heck out of me.
I know. But, you know, so I guess my point goes back to, with all these gray areas and stuff, why not just go straight ahead and land?
Well, there's not going to be a situation where you don't have the airport in sight, but you're going to go there, right? So you should be able to get a visual request, a visual approach in any of these.
But, you know, the obstacles are out there, too. You know, look at this, the Learjet in San Diego. They circling was NA at night, so they canceled IFR, circled and hit a hill. I mean, this was a turbine-powered airplane flown by two professionals, and they couldn't stay clear of the hill.
Didn't hit a hill. They stalled and lost control.
Trying to avoid the hill.
but it's like apples and oranges. It's like we're not in a Learjet and we're not around terrain.
No, but they flew an illegal approach and to get around a requirement that they couldn't circle.
Apples and oranges, in my opinion.
So presumably, if you're concerned about the obstacles into Palo Alto, you would object to flying in their VFR too, right? Like, say you're on the ground at San Carlos, would you make a VFR flight from San Carlos to Palo Alto? Say it's a clear, you know, a clear VFR night.
Well, that actually would be an option. You could land at San Carlos, regroup, and just do the quick hop over to Palo Alto, VFR at 1,500 feet or something like that. But again, now you're briefed for it, you're prepared for it. You're not making this up on the fly as you're going along.
Right. But what I'm suggesting is that if you're okay with that, then it's not really the obstacles that concern you.
No,
right?
No.
It's the coordination or the awkward break off of the approach or something like that. Right.
I think the age-old question about NA at night is, what do you do if you're VFR? And does it make any difference? And I think really what the regulatory difference is that when you're flying an instrument approach, you're relying on TURPS criteria to keep you safe. And if you're VFR from the very, very beginning, your mindset is, I'm responsible for myself. Would I go into an unfamiliar airport that is NA at night, where there are potential obstacles around that I can't see? Well, probably not. I'd probably just want to make sure I was at least once there during the day so I could figure out what that area is.
And John, you talked to some of the local controllers here.
Yep.
What did they tell you about how people are using these procedures in creative ways?
They were the ones who suggested the Moffitt approach, right, actually, as being more preferable than the San Carlos. And it's easier for them, too, because all the traffic's going in one direction. It's all going northwest. So they would rather do that than the San Carlos. But I guess people do the San Carlos thing also. And I think some of that would depend upon the exact ceiling and where you could break out and what you could do.
Sure.
I did want to touch on, though, the other part of it about the controller responsibility in this, and we touched on it briefly in the expert response. And the FAA has come out with direction to the controllers that it's not their job, it's not their responsibility. The receipt of an approach clearance does not relieve the pilot's responsibility to comply with the procedure, because the controller basically has no idea what, even if the procedure wasn't NA, any approach, as a controller, you don't know what equipment the airplane has. You don't know what approach category you're going to fly. Some approaches are NA for C and Ds. It might be minimums are different for different approach categories and stuff. That's not the controller's responsibility. You're sitting in a dark room. You don't even know if it's dark outside. You know, the airport you're working, if you're an en-route controller, could be in a different time zone even. So all of that stuff is strictly put back on the pilot.
Mark?
At the same time, speaking to a lot of different controllers, you'll have some which will still, if it's NA at night, say, sorry, I won't give you that approach.
Right.
So there are controllers who will go above and beyond just the disclaimer of liability and still say, no, we're not doing that.
Let's switch roles here, and let me put this question to Catherine. Let's say you're the CFI in this situation. We know you would go ahead and land at San Carlos, but you've told the student, you know, your PIC, you make the decision, and they say, well, I'm going to break off this approach and land at Palo Alto. Do you let that play out? Or, you know, which options are you okay with the student choosing, and where are you going to intervene?
Yeah, I think if this were the candidate's or the student's home airport, I'd feel better about that. But since he is unfamiliar, that's a no-go.
What about you, Bruce?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, yeah. Again, he may be the PIC, you know, you're saying you're the PIC, it's your decision. I'm the flight instructor. Who's the FAA going to come down on if something goes wrong?
Right, right. But sometimes you'll let someone make a mistake, right, and let it play out. And
again, I would be happy to let them do that if I were at some rural airport, you know, or someplace with less complicated airspace and traffic and everything, but not
sure.
Here. That's the thing.
Catherine.
And I'd also, I think it's different if I were familiar with the airport too. This flight instructor is catching a plane out of Oakland, so I assume that the flight instructor is not from the area. So I think that would be a no-go.
You know, if we remove the objection of the obstacles around Palo Alto, which it seems like maybe aren't an issue, right? Because you would go there VFR. The other objection that I'm hearing a lot of is that this is just complicated airspace, that the coordination is complicated. What if you back this up and make this request in advance? Or what if the controller suggests it? You say you're going to divert to San Carlos, and they say, hey, you know what a lot of people do is they break off this approach. I can give you a visual approach when you do that. Right? That removes the concern about coordination and complication. And does that change it for anybody who isn't going to do it otherwise?
It doesn't change it for me, and that's mostly because I wouldn't even think of doing it without coordinating it way in advance. So I'm at least assuming that there was advanced coordination, or that there would be.
Yeah, it wouldn't change it for me, but the other factor that we have to consider in this, too, is that this is like the eighth instrument approach that this pilot's done since God knows when this morning, you know, and and having the stress of having a broken airplane and everything, you know, it's the Swiss cheese model kind of thing. All these little pieces lining up, and now you know you go through this whole day and you wind up plunking it down and landing on the nose wheel or something like that, and you know, there's enough things that could go wrong, and there's not a whole lot to be gained by going over to Palo Alto.
And the instructor's bound to be tired too.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be exhausted after shepherding someone through 8 approaches, you know. I'm not going to be sharp.
Yeah.
So I don't need this.
Doug, you do this all the time, right? How is your performance? How is the students, your clients' performance at the end of a day like this?
I will certainly say that my performance is very degraded after a day like that. And I just finished a week last week of some days like that. The end of the day, I'm beat. I'm absolutely beat. I will say, in airspace other than here, I might be very tempted to do it, but there's a lot going on in the Bay Area, and there's so many potentials for problems. Although I said I would request the vectors, and then I'm sorry, the minimum vectoring altitudes over the airport, and then vectors. I'd kind of stick with that. I want to get it on the ground just as badly as my client, yeah. maybe more so. But I still want to live for the next client.
Yeah, but you're comfortable if you can get it above the airport. It's about the airport, you're comfortable with the visual approach from there,
yep.
Right? Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I think this really speaks to how, for all the rules there are in the IFR system, there is also room to come up with some creative solutions, right? And you can look at that as the freedom to find the right tool for the job, or you can look at it as just enough rope to hang yourself with. And I think we have both of those opinions around the table today.